We all please stand and pledge allegiance to the flag. And if you please would remain standing as the invocation will be given by Captain Dwayne Brazil of Salvation Army.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's bow our hearts.
Dear Heavenly Father, we're grateful today to live in a grand and glorious country. We are blessed. We thank you for the privilege of being able to participate in the governance of this country with free elections. Lord, we ask today that you would guide and direct every piece of business that takes place here in this room. We ask that you would give us wisdom, that you would give us patience, and supernatural abilities perhaps that we lack in our own selves. We thank you for these things, and we give you all praise and glory. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Captain. We now will start presentations, and our first presentation will be Marcy Boucher, the Executive Director of Society for Disabilities.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thank you so very much. This is exciting. Stassels County was one of the very first people to declare June as Disability Awareness Month, and that was back in 2010. So thank you guys so very much for doing that. We all know that we have a problem with keeping our workforce here in our community and recruiting the different professionals to come into our area. And it's just recently been made known to me, one of the reasons for this is the lack of services for people with disabilities in our community. One of the local hospitals here was recruiting two different doctors who both had a child who had a disability. Both of them turned down the job for coming here, and it wasn't due to compensation, it was because of the services here in our community. So I just want to ask you guys to please remember this population as it affects all of us. When you're making your growth plans for the future, please remember to be inclusive. And I just want to thank you guys so very much for your forward thinking in our community.
Thank you. Would you please come up to... First of all, thank you for all your services.
Thank you.
You know, whereas Santa Fe County Board of Supervisors has recognized healthy communities as a priority, and disabilities can affect all people, regardless of race, age, gender, or social status. An increasing public awareness about diverse abilities is vital to fighting the stigma and discrimination that often serves as a barrier to employment, socialization, and individual well-being. There are an estimated 4,050,631 people with disabilities in the state of California, and over 68,840 people with disabilities over the age of 5 in San Rafael County. Within the next year, at least one out of every 8 Californians will experience a disability, either personally or through a family member. San Rafael County wants to celebrate and recognize people with different abilities, and people with different abilities are independent, productive, and part of the community. Education, understanding, access, engagement, relationships are important to monitor in the connection. Livable and healthy communities. The community thrives when residents appreciate the unique gifts inside people of all abilities. By developing relationships with our neighbors, we make our community a place where everyone participates and is a valued member. The Society for the Disabled will commemorate June 2015 and each June thereafter as Disability Aware Month. It is our pleasure in San Paul County to present this to you and to continue your work and thank you so much. Would you like to say a few more words?
And now, would you like to say a few words?
Just in honor of Disability Awareness Month, you guys can go to our Facebook page, and every day this wonderful lady right here is putting up a little saying for something for you to remember people who have disabilities in our community. So thank you guys very much for everything that you do for our community.
Well, thank you, and keep up the good work. Congratulations. Thank you. We will now go to a report from Stanislaus County Employment Retirement Association from Rick Santis, Executive Director.
Good morning to all of you. Thanks for having me here today. As you know, this is the presentation of the 2016 Stansera Actuarial Evaluation. The numbers that I'm going to put in here are essentially for the entire system because the actual evaluation is based in the aggregate, but of course you have your rates that are carved out individually. But I do give you the county rates, I believe, in a couple slides. But just keep that in mind when you see some of these numbers, that the county is approximately 90% of the entire Stansera system. So you can use that multiplier, if you will. So, interesting, change in the funded status between valuation years. We were last year at 87.5%, and that dropped by 12%, approximately, to 75.8%. Most of that is due to the assumption changes that the Board of Retirement agreed to do in this year's valuation, and I'll spend a little more time with that later on. And as you all know, the funded status is the percent of the liabilities, and the approximate it's an approximation of the percent of the liabilities that have been earned or currently have been earned by the group of employees that are covered by our current level of assets that we have. This is the dollar amount in the change of unfunded liability. Again, this is almost entirely due to the assumption changes. Most of the change is due to three major changes that we made. Again, we'll talk about that later. And I did the math myself, and I would estimate the county's share of that 578.9 to be about $540 million. Keep in mind that this is a snapshot as of June 30th, 2016. And we only reassess every June 30th. So this number is constantly in flux, and sometimes it can change very dramatically, but the things that change it dramatically are what the portfolio earns during the fiscal year. So a very good return year up in the teens, high teens, low 20s, which we've had in the past, could dramatically alter that unfunded liability. So keep in mind that this is a snapshot at one point in time. If we were to look at what we think we would have to pay off of that unfunded liability, I would tell you my assumption is that we're going to earn exactly what we think we're going to earn each and every year, which never happens. And so you're going to end up having to pay that off. But what I have found in the past over my 20-year career is that that number varies extraordinarily dramatically, and it can go from $550 million down to it could go to a surplus of $200 million, and it could go right back up. So keep in mind that that's a very, very volatile number, and it's really hard to pinpoint what the impact of that will be on the plan over the long run. So this is the first of the changes in assumptions that caused the dramatic increase in liabilities and the increase in the employer contribution rates. The good news is we're all living longer. And we're living longer because healthcare is getting better over time. Technology is improving. That's the good news. The bad news is it costs money to live longer. And we're going to be paying these benefits to our current crop of retirees, our future retirees, for a longer period of time. The biggest change that was incorporated into this year's valuation is the fact that the actuaries are assuming that it's not the case that, let's say, a 50-year-old today is going to live another, it is the case that a 50-year-old is going to live another 30 years, that's his expected lifetime, but it's not the case that a 20-year-old today, in 30 years when he turns 50, is going to live another 30 years. Those life expectancies are going to continue to increase over time because healthcare and technology is getting better. So this was the first year that the Society of Actuaries published tables that incorporated mortality improvement into those tables. And that's really what is causing the biggest hit here in this valuation, to the tune of $118 million for your current group of retirees, or your current group of members. Salary scales, what we found, or what the actuary found, was that assumed salary increases across the board decreased for everybody, but we found that in general that effect was greater for shorter service employees. Generally, what I have found, again, throughout my career, is that folks tend to get salary increases, larger salary increases, earlier in their career, and that's generally how actuarial assumptions are built to fund these liabilities. But our actuaries have found that that's not generally the case here, and they have brought down those salary increases for shorter service employees considerably. But again, it is across the board for everybody, but just more dramatic for the shorter term employees. The investment return assumption, this was another big one. This cost the plan about $160 million. I'll spend a little more time on this later on, but we essentially lowered that assumed rate of return by 50 basis points, or 0.5%. Two things. One, this reflects the current capital market environment that's out there. We've had reports from economists, we've had our own actuary, and we've also had our own investment consultant come to the board and say, you're just not going to, simply not going to earn as much as you have in the past. This is a trend that's occurring up and down the state that I've seen, and there are very few plans anymore. In fact, I think I only know one plan that still has an investment return that's just south of 8%. My hunch is that that trend is going to continue downward. I think that what happens is you start to get one or two in the public sector, these plans start to reconsider their investment returns, and then it's kind of like a train barreling down the tracks, and all the other plans kind of jump on board because they don't want to be that outlier. I think some of that is correct here, but I tend to agree with the reports that I'm seeing that capital market expectations aren't going to be like we've seen them in the past. And also another big thing is that the board decided to shift the portfolio of assets and take a more risk-aware approach in the way we invest. I'll spend a little time with that as well. Supervisor Chiesa asked me before coming up here what CalPERS was currently at and what they earned, and I'll talk about that. CalPERS is currently at 7.5% on their investment return. I just read, though, before I came up here, that they expect to trend that down to 6.5% over 10 years. I know CalPERS very well, and I don't know if they will stick through with that itinerary, but we'll see what happens. But at least that's their plan for right now. So anyway. So now let's look at what actually happened. The fund actually earned 4.2%. This compares to 2.4% for CalPERS in 14-15. So we were quite a bit above them. At this time last year, we expected the fund to earn 7.75%. So this was the year prior to before we dropped the discount rate down to 7.25%. However, even though we only earned 4.2%, there was no loss to the fund. The system had built up $150 million in assets that weren't recognized when calculating the funded ratio and the contribution rates. It's part of the actuarial smoothing process. We built up a very hefty reserve from the period 2009 to about 2012. And so now we're relying on those, we're tapping on those to keep the contribution rates as stable as we can. We used approximately $81 million to keep those rates fairly stable. This doesn't include, obviously, the assumption changes, but everything else, it kept the rates fairly stable. And that still leaves us about $66 million in reserves. That being said, right now things aren't looking all that great. I estimate we're at about 2% this year for the fiscal year. We've still got 3 weeks, June left. I've seen a lot happen, both good and bad, in June. In fact, I've seen a lot of volatile Junes in my career, so there's no telling what we might see for the rest of the month. But hopefully, no matter what we do, I would like to think that that $66 million that's left there would cover any shortfall that we might have. But again, June's still got 3 weeks to go, so we'll see what happens there. This is just a quick graphic of our historical rates of return, and in general, you can see that we are most of the time above the bogeys, but I think the things that are that really make pension funds hard to deal with is the fact that you have certain periods of time where the markets perform very, very poorly, and it puts strain on funded ratios and contribution rates. And you can see the big drop there. I think it was 2008, 2009. However, over the long run, you see that the historical annualized rate of return, Stan Sarah has done quite well. The 15-year return is a little under what we're assuming right now, but you can generally tend to see as one goes out farther in time and takes into account more data to calculate that historical rate of return, that annualized return, long-term return, tends to stabilize. You can see the range there is what, about 1.5% between 15 and 20 years. However, you can see in the short term, those returns are quite volatile. So it is the case that we can earn what we think we can. That's not that difficult as long as you have enough years to be able to meet that bogey. The problem, though, with these funds is indeed what happens in the short term, not what happens in the long term. That affects your budgets, and it affects the way we look when we present this information to you guys. So now we're talking about the actual contribution rates. What you see is the rate jumped quite a bit between 2015 and 2016. It jumped by about, 7.5%. The board felt, as every system up and down the state has felt, that this hit would be too much to incorporate in one fell swoop, so the board decided to phase that in over a three-year period. That three-year period coincides with the amount of time that we take in between experience studies. In other words, every 3 years we look at what we think the assumptions should be going forward based on what happened in the past, and we readjust those. So in 3 years from now, we will again do an experience study and adjust our assumptions, but the board decided to phase that in over that three-year period of time. So essentially, in the aggregate, the county's contribution rates are going to be approximately 25%. How that is allocated across your classifications, general and safety, we have those, but I didn't bring those today. And then this is the projected county contribution rates. This is one of the things I want to stress is the caveat. These rates assume all the assumptions are realized, which never, ever, ever happens. So keep that in mind. But it's a good way. I tend to look at these as to which way the rates are trending and then ask myself, why are they trending the way they're trending? You can see the rates are going to trend up to about 30% in the third year of the phase-in, when the phase-in is done. And then they're going to start to trend down. And this has to do with two things. One, the fact that the unfunded liability as a percentage of your payroll is going to start shrinking. That percentage will start shrinking. Your payroll is going to grow fast, much faster than the unfunded liability is going to grow. And in fact, we hope that the unfunded liability is going to decrease. So that's going to stretch that part of your contribution rate out, and that's what's causing the decrease in contribution rate, which theoretically should continue. The other thing that's causing the decrease in the contribution rate is the fact that PEPRA, which was implemented on January of 2013, the more that the PEPRA membership becomes a part of the overall plan, that rate should also start to trend down as well. And we're already starting to see that, and I'll talk about that in just a couple slides here. There's also, every time we change assumptions, it not only affects the employers, but it affects the employees. And so these are the average increases that we found across the major tiers within your plan for employees. Some of the employees that started late in their careers in the 40s and 50s are going to take a much bigger hit than we saw some numbers that I think 2.5% for some of the older employees. I don't know if we have a lot of employees that start their careers age 45 and 50. We may. You would know that better than I would. But those ones will take a greater hit. The employee rates are higher for those that start their careers later in public service. And the ones that start early in their 20s, they probably will see very, very little change in their employee rates. But nonetheless, every time we change assumptions, the employees share some of the burden of that cost as well. They don't share in the unfunded liabilities that build up over time, but they do share in the cost to fund the plan on an annual basis going forward. So here we'll talk about what the board decided to do. So again, as I alluded to earlier, the board decided to take a more risk-aware approach in terms of how we look at our liabilities. So what this portfolio will essentially do is we'll carve this portfolio out into two pieces. The first piece will look at our projected benefit payments over the next 6 years. And then what it will do, it will attempt to buy high-grade bonds, corporate bonds, treasury bonds, high-grade bonds that actually pay money, they pay coupons, and they mature at the time when our benefit payments are going to come due. So they will be immune, the ability for us to pay benefits will be immune to the shocks in the capital markets. Because as long as you're willing to hold a bond to maturity, yes, the market value will be affected by the fluctuation in interest rates, but it's going to continue to pay the coupons and maturation when it comes due. So what this does is this allows us to carve off a part of the portfolio, dedicate it to 6 years of benefit payments, and then knowing that we have 6 years of benefit payments covered, we can feel more comfortable about taking on more illiquid assets on the rest of the portfolio because we won't have to tap those assets to pay our benefits. We would be able to withstand market fluctuations because we don't need those assets to pay benefits. I'm hoping that in theory it works great. I've never actually executed a theory like this, but in theory it works very, very well. Hopefully if the markets do well and interest rates start to trend upward, which makes this proposition cheaper, the higher interest rates are, the cheaper this proposition becomes. But as time goes on, and if interest rates generally tend to start trending up, and this plan works, it would be very nice to start insuring more and more benefit payments, even going farther out. This is not a unique concept. It's unique to the public sector. There's one other system that has started this as well. We both started it this year. But it is very common in the insurance world. Insurance companies couldn't survive unless they eliminated the risk that's involved in their inability to project their liabilities when they come due. This is really, really common for property and casualty companies because they don't know when hurricanes are going to occur, when fires are going to occur. So they have to really invest very wisely and very conservatively because they don't know when these accidents are going to occur. But one of the things that I've always said is that retirement systems don't capitalize on the fact that our benefit payments are very easy to predict. We don't take advantage of that. And this process takes advantage of the predictability and the benefits, and it invests as efficiently as possible. And finally, just a quick word on PEPRA. Right now, the PEPRA integration, and what I mean by that is the percent of the workforce that are PEPRA members, it's growing very considerably. It's growing faster than we thought it was going to. Right now, we're at 30% of the total workforce. We're 3.5 years into the implementation of PEPRA. We project the system to be around 50% PEPRA members by 2018, and even 75% by 2026. What you see is the long-term expected decreases there, 2.4 for general, 5.3 for safety for PEPRA. These decreases are the decrease in the ongoing cost to fund new service accruals each year. What you don't see, and what's very hard to project, is the level of unfunded liabilities. But I would tend to say, just anecdotally, from what I've seen during my years, is that with a lower benefit level, you generally tend to have lower unfunded liabilities, and also you generally tend to have less volatile unfunded liabilities. So I think ultimately those expected or ultimate decreases over the next 15 to 20 years will be somewhat larger than that. But like I said, those are very hard to pinpoint what those decreases are because they're so predicated on what the markets will do over time. And that's all I have for you today, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any comment or question by the board?
Start with me, huh? Thank you, Mr. Santos, for the presentation. Question, on the reserve that's there, is that included into the unfunded liability?
No. So those reserves are not used in the calculation of the unfunded liability, the funded ratio, or setting the employer contribution rates.
Okay, so a snapshot really isn't as bad as the 500 that is.
That's correct. There's two ways to look at this. You can look at this using the true market value of assets, the funded ratio, or you can also look at it using the valuation value of assets. And in this case, if we were to look at this is the market value funded ratio that I put in here. So if we were to use the actuarial funded ratio, you'd see a smaller funded ratio. That's what's in this valuation right here, but you're correct.
Okay, and then your smoothing period, you're trying to get that down to 20 years, is that correct?
So right now, as of July 1st, 2016, the system is being amortized over 20 years. So it'd be like buying a home and amortizing it over 20 years. The path that we're on right now is to bring that down 1 year each year, until we hit 15 years, and then we would roll that 15-year amortization each year.
Okay. I've always been concerned of the continual decrease in the expected returns. If we're 20 years right now, the 20-year return is higher than what we're saying are expected as. And my question is have we ever seen a 20-year return as low as 7.25%?
Not at Stan Sarah. I think I have seen it for a couple systems up and down the state.
But not for us.
But not here, no.
Yeah. And so that's always been a concern, because as the lower we push that, the more taxpayer money we need to put into the system. And I understand it from the investment side. The more money you have in there, the greater things you can do, and the more money and returns you can get. But it's also taxpayer money that we're having to fund in early. So, and then I would love to learn more about this new portfolio route that you're going.
I'd love to talk about it, but
fees and all the rest. So just
give me a call. We can.
All right.
Yes. First, Rick, thanks for what you're doing. I always point, and I say this all the time, but people think accounting. Accountants' jobs are boring, and I always say, well, no, it's not as bad as those actuarials. That's so much worse. So I'm glad you're here. But you're doing a great job. Just to kind of share the same things that Bill talked about here, that the things we're up against as far as that you guys are doing all you can to try to get a better return on the investment, and that's one of the only vehicles that we have to try to help us here at this point. And with the mortality rates the way they are, that works against – that's a terrible thing to say, but that does – cost us and work against us here. So same thing. I hope the investment policies that you guys are putting in place here, the change here, is going to help and help with that return, which will help, you know, as far as taxpayer dollars go. And then I just think we're going to, you know, eventually going to have to look at other options here to figure out what we can do as far as with the retirement plan and ways to make this better. So we'll look into that more.
Good. Anyone else wish? Yes.
Rick. You use two different assumptions. There's the actuarial value of assets. There's two of them. What's the difference between the?
So the actuarial, what happens is each year as you have your investment return, your investment gain or your investment loss, whether it be above the assumed rate of return or below, we only recognize 1/5 of that change and incorporate that into calculating the rates and the funded ratio and the unfunded liability. If you have a very large return, say $100 million over the expected return, we only take $20 million of that and we stick it, well, we just don't use it when we calculate, or we use the $20 million to calculate the rates and we set $80 million off aside and we play off that as the future then unfolds. So then the next year, whatever we earn, we recognize 1/5 of that and then 1/5 of the 80% and so on and so on and so on.
Okay, I understand. And I'm very surprised when I look at the PEPRA in 2018, 50% of our workforce, because no one would have thought that. But we've got an aging population, but we're going to see some benefits sooner than I think our expectation was when it passed. I also want to point out, I think around $61.5 million is going to be Stanislaus County's contribution in the 16-17 budget. That's a huge number. In a forward look, even with the potential to see a decrease in rates at 3 years out, 4 years out, it's still slight. You know, it's a slight decrease. So when we talk about the overall scheme, the investment scheme, I think you're going for a more conservative investment scheme. That's why you're lowering your rate of return. You have a better opportunity to make that with a more conservative. But it's still going to put hardship on the county, as well as Ceres and the courts and the mosquito abatement and all these other folks that participate. Coming back to a question I asked you before, the comparisons, here we picked up $250 million in liability by accounting changes, which I think are very fair. I think what we've done is very fair. But when we look at the health of retirement systems across the state, including CalPERS and San Joaquin and Merced County, it's very difficult to actually compare apples with apples because everyone's smoothing is different. Everyone's assumptions are different on their actuarials, life expectancy, rate of return. Is there a push anywhere to try and harmonize so that we can actually compare and see how folks are doing?
I don't know if there's a push to do that. It's something that we generally look at every couple years. What I can tell you is that, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, I do know CalPERS is at 73% funded, which is a little bit worse than we are, I guess, or we're a little bit better. San Joaquin is very similar to us right now. They always have been. The benefit levels are pretty close to the same. Merced County has had their issues over the years, and they, several years ago in the early 2000s, they implemented a very rich plan for their general members, and unfortunately I think they're paying for it right now, but their funded ratios even today are still in the 60s. I think that in general, from what I've seen, this system, well, right now we've moved from being one of the top funded systems to somebody that's probably a little below average, but we are one of only three or four systems that have taken the step to lower their discount rate down to 7.25%. That's huge. It's extraordinarily huge, and so we need to keep that in mind when we compare ourselves to others. It's too difficult. You have nine trustees on all these boards up and down the state. They all have their different ways of how systems should be funded and what their fiduciary responsibilities are and how it should be funded, and I think that that's what creates this dichotomy, this differences between systems up and down the state. So it is extraordinarily hard to look at funded ratios, contribution rates on the surface without digging in deeper and finding out the assumptions that are being used to set those contribution rates and ratios.
And the fact is that no matter how we compare to other folks, it just makes us feel good. We still owe $540 million, bottom line, which is a huge sum of money.
It is.
And going forward, and it's something that we're going to have to continue to tackle. Thank you, though.
Sure. And for the assumed rate, we have to also take in consideration that about a third of the portfolio is in fairly low return liquid assets, treasury bonds and interest. So, we're getting, a lot more than the assumed rate on a lot of investments, but to have a balanced portfolio that has about a third in very, very safe investments, don't have very high return. I think that's why we're down to 7.25% net.
That's right. Yeah, that's a very good point, because some could take a look at our portfolio right now and just focus on the illiquid part of the portfolio and say, boy, these guys are taking on a lot of risk. But you, just to what I was saying earlier, you have to look at the entire picture here and understand as Supervisor DeMartini said, that there's another part of the portfolio that's extraordinarily liquid and dedicated to the payment of our benefits, which gives us all great comfort that we could withstand market turmoil and not have to sell assets in a depressed market to fund those liabilities because we have them covered. It's a very good point. You know, it's a good point just to realize that you can't just pick up a valuation or look at the statistics without really digging in a little deeper and understanding what the system is truly doing.
I think, as a memory serves me right, about 65% of what a retiree gets and his pension all comes from investments on the fund. Is that
We figure about 70%. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's pretty good. You know, you look at what the county puts in, what the employee puts in through their lifetime here, and, you know, 65-70% of that check every month comes from investments from the Stansara board. So I think that's really substantial as you compare that to like the Social Security system, who has no investments at all. I mean, we really, that board investing that money makes all the difference.
I totally understand what you're saying and agree with it, but I'll just go back to what he said earlier, is that the push in the state is to, I think the words were, get on the train and lower the expected return. And I would rather base it on our results rather than up and down the state. And so that's where I'm coming with is the expected rate of return should be based on what we've done and not some other county.
Yeah. Well, we're going to make some probably major changes in the asset allocation. As, you know, you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,000 right now. You can't really realistically expect that to go up 7-8% a year. We're having to look at other types of investments and kind of reshuffling the portfolio, which is, you know, the responsibility of the board. And I think the changes we're going to make are going to be good ones.
Yeah, I do too.
Anyone an additional? Well, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks, Rick. We will now go to public comment. Anyone who wishes to speak on a subject not on the agenda today has 5 minutes to discuss whatever they so wish. Is there anyone in the public wishing to make a comment? If not, I'll bring it back to the board, and we will now go into the consent calendar.
And Mr. Chairman, before approving today's consent calendar, staff wants to make a minor technical correction to the ordinances in item B12. This minor correction just relates to the effective date of the ordinances. We've put in front of you the revised copies of the ordinance as well as given one to the clerk. And so no other changes are being made, but item B12 has those minor corrections.
Is anyone on the board wishing to pull any of the consent items? If not, before the board takes action on the consent calendar, does anyone in the audience wish to make a comment or have a question on any matter on the consent calendar? If not, I'll bring it back to the board and ask for action. May I have a motion?
Motion to approve the consent calendar.
I will second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. We now will go on to correspondence.
This board has received a worker adjustment and retraining notification letter from Nestle USA regarding a temporary layoff of 72 employees at their Modesto facility located at 736 Garner Road from July 25th, 2016 through August 7th, 2016.
Refer to the Alliance Network and Stanislaw Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a notice from the California Fish and Game Commission regarding the continuation of the public hearing to June 22nd and 23rd, 2016 on the potential listing of the northern spotted owl as a threatened species.
Refer to the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a copy of the Stanislaus Local Agency Formation Commission Fiscal Year 2016-2017 2017 final budget.
Referred to the Auditor, Controller, and Chief Executive Office. We now will go to anyone on the board have any reports.
Yes, I have one, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to announce that the Westside Healthcare Task Force is going to be doing their Health Summit and Biggest Loser Weight Loss Contest in Newman on August 25th. Anybody wants to be on the team? Well, the teams are 10, so we compete off usually with residents of Newman, Patterson, and Gustine. It's Gustine's part of our group. So August 25th will be our Health Summit.
Thank you. We also now will go to the Legislative Fiscal Management Report. Dan Risen.
No report this morning.
And before we adjourn this meeting, I'd like to, the board as a whole would like to remind people, make sure you vote today and exercise your privilege. And at this time, this meeting is adjourned.